WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump will soon meet with China's Xi Jinping in South Korea to talk about issues, including trade, CBS's Weijia Zhang.
If they are not able to strike a deal, it could be very tough, not only for America, but for the entire global economy as well.
Trump says he has ordered the U.S. to restart nuclear weapons testing. Hurricane Melissa, heading toward the central Bahamas, has killed dozens of people in the Caribbean. Jamaica is reeling from damage caused by yesterday's 185-mile-per-hour sustained winds. Ex-Central Illinois Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson is convicted of second-degree murder in the shooting death of Sonia Massey, who was black. Her father, James Wilburn.
There's a difference in this country when you have my skin color and Grayson's skin color. We need serious justice, not a miscarriage of justice.
Grayson will be sentenced on January 29th. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
From Eau Claire City Hall to Madison, stay informed with Civic Media's Radio Network's news team.
Jordan Love, Player of the Week. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Packers quarterback Jordan Love named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week after his performance Sunday night against Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. Love threw for 360 yards, three touchdowns, and had the highest quarterback rating of his career at 134.2. A month ago, he threw an interception in the fourth quarter against Cleveland that cost him in that game against the Browns. Was that an opportunity to grow from?
Everything's a growth opportunity. You know, you talk about that game, you talk about years past games. You know, you go all the way back to playoff game in San Fran, ending the game on a pick. So there's so many moments that are learning opportunities that, you know, you get back in these situations again at the end of games when it's the most critical times. You got to go make plays, and you take all those experiences and just kind of learn from them. And some of these situations, you got to go out there and make plays, and you got to make some of these tight contested throws, but it's all about being smart. You know, I've learned from all those mistakes and go out there and maybe win the game on a two-minute drill.
That's Packers quarterback Jordan Love with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. On Tuesday, a federal judge immediately halted the Trump administration from firing workers during the shutdown, illegally firing government workers during the shutdown, mind you. Now, the question is, will they listen? And nothing this administration does is following the rule of law or the guardrails of democracy. So I fully expect more of this horrible stuff to happen. But understand, this government shutdown is really hitting working people the hardest. You've got federal workers who are going out without paychecks, soldiers who are risking their lives, not being paid, millions of families who are losing food assistance. Bad stuff happening. And, you know, rightly so. You've got unions and the alphabet of non-profit groups calling for Democrats to reopen the government, pay workers, feed children, support soldiers, keep vital social programs running. And you go, yeah. The harsh truth, the harsh reality, and this is something I've known from the beginning, Democrats are going to lose this fight. They're always going to lose this fight. Because, and this is the sad reality, this is the reality. And I'm proud of that reality, that they actually care about people. They actually care about the people who are being hurt from this shutdown. They want to help working families, the vulnerable, the poor, the downtrodden, the people who rely on government services, they actually buy some of that Jesus talk about caring for the least among us, the sick, the poor, the elderly. And the reality is that that's their character flaw. It's our character flaw. It is the central character flaw in this kind of a fight where political power matters more than people's lives. Because on the other side of the aisle, you've got Republicans who could end this shutdown immediately by simply going, hey, we're going to extend those health insurance subsidies for a short while we debate them. But they won't. Why? Because they don't care about you, me, or, well, any working person struggling to pay the bills and put food on the table. They don't care. Their priorities lie elsewhere, in political games and in power plays that leave real working Americans abandoned. This shutdown should be a clear message to working people that the Republicans value power over you. And understand, Democrats are caught between standing up for us to ensure that, you know, we don't get screwed, and the brutal costs of sticking to those values. But if we want to win, you know, got to fight harder, because the Republicans' cruelty won't end unless we make it impossible to ignore the damage they're doing. And that's why I think it's so important to keep pointing out why I said Democrats should have left Washington a long time ago and should have gone and adopted a Republican district. And while we're focused on this, and again, this is the central thing, a lot of stuff that's just going under the radar. For instance, our 916 billionaires now have an accumulated wealth of in excess of $8 trillion. While we're talking about taking subsidies away from people to get health insurance, while we're cutting off food SNAP benefits, the global private equity world is now over $22 trillion. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the headlines. Our global capitalists, our billionaires, our 916 billionaires, who could have a very nice time in Trump's ballroom because, you know, they're paying some of it. You know, Amazon announced layoffs of about 14,000 corporate workers, and there's talk of a reduction reaching 30,000. And they're spending big on AI. Nestle cutting 16,000 jobs. Accenture cutting at least 11,000 to focus on AI. Meta, they're going to get rid of about 600 artificial intelligence jobs because they want to expand other divisions. You can go down the list. Target getting rid of 1,000 corporate jobs. Telefonica getting rid of some 6,000 employees. Siemens, some 5,600 globally. ConocoPhillips, the big oil company, they're dipping down 3,000 people. Microsoft, we go through this. We could go all day at the number of layoffs that are happening. And oh, by the way, stock prices are going up in many of those because the rich keep getting richer, while the poor and the working class keep taking it on the chin. Because, you know, these are people's jobs. These are families' livelihoods. At a time where we're slashing and burning the social safety net. And people are wondering why Zohran Mamdani is leading in the polls in New York. And the right's losing their mind over, he's a socialist. No, he's talking about caring about his neighbors. It's interesting that we have a Muslim who stands by Christian values more than our most loud, most out, most religious Christians in our government. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for the sick, the poor, the downtrodden, the least among us. That's socialism, according to the right. That's socialism. It's bad. We're a country that believes in capitalism. Hooray for me and the heck with everyone else. And the sad reality is our political leaders believe that. But when you talk to average everyday Americans, it's not socialism to care about your neighbors. It's not socialism to care about your community. It's not socialism to care about your family and your friends. It's called community. Something maybe they should think about. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the headlines. soaring electricity bills are squeezing households as utilities seek higher rates. CBS News on October 27th. Rystad Energy says U.S. power demands rise as data centers spread, but prices won't peak till 2030. So we got a long way to go, in their opinion. And of course, the Washington Post, they chime in with their headline of, there's a reason electricity prices have been rising, and it's not data centers. The Center for American Progress put out a piece, residents in 49 states and Washington, D.C. face increasing electric and natural gas bills. And probably my favorite, the folks over at American Action Forum, they put out a piece, how much are electricity prices rising and why? And you ask how much? A lot. 10% in just the beginning of this year. But hey, it's not inflation. Just ask Donald Trump. And the why? Well, wars and Trump's insane policies. Yeah, they actually wrote that. A fairly middle of the road to right kind of organization. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just how bad we're all going to get screwed on electric prices, especially as bad policy moves us in the wrong direction. I've asked Monica Curry to come share some thoughts with us. Monica is the Pennsylvania State Director of Solar United Neighbors, solarunitedneighbors.org, the website, if you want to take a look at what they do. Monica, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back, Rick. I really appreciate it.
So electricity prices are going up. And have gone up a lot. How bad is it? I know the headlines are. I know that, you know, we're going to be scared straight. I know my electric bill came. How bad?
Well, I mean, we're just seeing the beginning of it. These are actually results. The rates that we just saw increase in July are actually the results from last year's auction results on PJM, which is our electric grid. So we're actually seeing in delayed time what's happening when we are continually adding to the demand for energy. That's, you know, these data centers, but it's also increasing population and lots of people electrifying. And we're not at the same time building out enough energy production. So because you have a greater demand and less supply, prices are going to rise. And we are, as you said, just seeing the beginning of it.
So if I heard you right, it's all Joe Biden's fault. If I heard you right, it was last year, rising demand. We didn't produce enough because evidently we didn't drill enough during the Biden years, according to my Red Hat friend. So clearly this isn't Trump's fault, is it? Not even a little.
Well, I'm going to leave that analysis to you. It's done so well. But really, I mean, it is the effect of this like status quo of we're just going to keep putting fossil fuels on the grid over and over and assume that it's one day going to get better, even though we have all this evidence showing that it's not. It's actually the cause of a lot of these rising prices. But solar energy, one of the fastest, cheapest forms of energy that we can put onto the grid. So why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we adding more solar and bringing prices down for everybody? I mean, we're we're already seeing the cost of food, of living, of schooling, everything's going up. So let's, you know, do the common sense thing and add more solar, bring prices down.
Yeah, as my friend Brent Booker says, the head of LIUNA, he said, I got an all of the above strategy. We need what we need, and we should be moving in directions that are going to make things cheaper, more affordable, more sustainable. Absolutely. But, you know, and this is where we've been at on the program all along. We're going to continue to use the fossil fuels, but sanely, maybe we should start moving in a direction that's a little bit more renewable, a little friendlier, a little bit. But again, you know, I go back to what you said a minute ago, we're more electrifying things. You know, what I get from people is that it's all Biden's fault because he closed the Keystone XL pipeline, even though never mind that he gave out more drilling leases than any president in history. There was more oil production during his term than at any time in this country. But it's his fault because, well, he wanted batteries.
Well, and, you know, it is really interesting hearing some people talking about the I'm all of the above energy when I think what they're really saying is I'm for a variety of fossil fuels and the energy production resources that we've historically used. But we are in an unprecedented moment. We have this booming population. We have new technology coming on the grid, massive data centers that everybody's going to be using and taking advantage of. We need to get creative. We need to have, you know, transformative solutions. And I think adding renewable energy and lots of different energy sources to the grid, that's really going to help drive down prices, but it's also going to improve the resiliency and the reliability of their grid.
Yeah, but as someone who's out there, you know, promoting the solar, and I'm a big fan. Look, I got solar panels on my house. I think they're fantastic. I think they should be on every new home built in this country as a matter of code. I think we should be putting on every warehouse and on every big box retail store. I think we should be filling the landscape of the Southwest with big, beautiful solar panels. But we've got an administration right now that's hostile to any of that and wind and all of it because it was the other guy. And I got to tell you, I think that's really all it is. It's Biden's idea. So yeah. This administration has to be opposed to it. Because look, I look at the Keystone XL pipeline thing. People have lost their minds. I know people are still complaining about it as if it were the answer to our problems. It isn't, wasn't, never was going to be, but are silent when Trump wanted to shut down the Revolution Wind project off the coast of New England. Makes no sense. But this is unfortunately where we are. So you're in a weird spot. Because you got a great idea, a great product, something that could really help the country, but you got folks who are extremely hostile with almost no reason.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree. I mean, I guess I would say some people do believe that they have a reason, but a lot of that is based on misinformation. So I'm going to recommend folks go to solarunitedneighbors.org. That's our website. We have lots of really good information about solar. We're not a solar installer, but the bigger point that you're making, I think, is really important. And what I expect to see is energy prices driving voters to the polls come November 4th. I think that it is really important to people that they start seeing savings in their day-to-day life. Like, it is too expensive to live. And so they're really going to be pushing for elected officials who are creative, paying attention to lowering energy bills. And I think it's really important for current elected officials to be paying attention to that because, you know, in Pennsylvania, our elections are next year. So, you know, take a cue from these coming results because I think we're seeing in Virginia, New Jersey, these energy bills are driving people to vote.
Yeah, I mean, where's Jimmy McMillan when we need him? Do you remember who Jimmy McMillan was?
No.
He ran for, I think it was mayor in New York several years back. He was the rent is too damn high guy.
Yep. I know the slogan.
Yeah, I mean, that was him. And look, now we're in an era where everything's too damn high. We need that guy because electricity prices, I just talked yesterday on the program about New Jersey, potentially seeing healthcare costs rise 175%. Working families can't afford this. And now understand, Most people that I know voted for Donald Trump, not because he was a smart business guy, not because he grabbed women by the you-know-what, but because he promised them. He promised. Day one, dictator, prices, buck a gallon for gas, buck a dozen for eggs, healthcare, big, beautiful, everything. It was supposed to be utopia. It's not utopia.
But I do think, I mean, exactly what you said, the voters that brought Donald Trump to this presidency in 2024, they were voting based on economics. That was, you know, a year ago. People were really scared about being able to pay rent month to month, being able to afford to put food on the table. Things have not gotten better. And in many ways, they're about to get worse for a lot of people. And so I do really think that we're going to see more voters prioritizing legislators and elected officials who, you know, are able to kind of like pass that bureaucracy and really bring a lot of these new renewable energy programs to their states. Like in Pennsylvania, we're looking at a community energy program. People could buy a subscription and see savings on their monthly electric bill. Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, no, but you know, let me ask you this, because, you know, as electricity prices go up, as things become more unaffordable and it becomes this kind of rage issue, isn't this better for solar? Because it, as you've pointed out, it's cheaper. It's faster to implement. It's more direct. It's local. You can do a lot of things well, quickly. Isn't this kind of you being going, yeah, jack your rates through the roof because we got the best product? Because, look, I believe things only happen, and this is where I take a lot of flack for, when there's crisis, when there's pain. I guess we're not smart enough to go, yeah, let's not touch the stove. As kids, we all touched the stove, every one of us. And I fear that this is another one of those stove moments that, you know, we're going to have to touch it before we realize there's got to be something else. I'm curious where you are.
Yeah, I really wish that we didn't have to get into a crisis in order to be innovative. That's why I'm really hopeful that voters are going to be thinking about, you know, creative solutions to energy prices and really voting that direction. But I think you're right that, you know, we are getting to this kind of crisis point where we are in Pennsylvania and in the PJM region generally, we're about to get to a point where there's actually more demand for energy than there is supply. That is just going to raise prices more than people can even begin to imagine. That's going to be happening in the next like 5 to 10 years. So we are nowhere near that. Like, this is painful right now, yeah, which is why we need to be thinking right now about adding more solar to the grid.
No, and as you were going through that, I was remembering when I was a kid, Jimmy Carter was in the White House and he gave this big speech about how, you know, maybe turn the thermostat down a little bit, wear a sweater, because, you know, hey, you know, we're having an energy crisis, and maybe we need to, that C word, that nasty, evil C word, conserve. Look, conservatives really hate that word, because, you know, it's bad. It's bad for business to conserve. I don't think we're a country that's gonna want to conserve, even. Look, I look at the eggs, man. I sat and I watched 10 people complain about the price of eggs, and not one of them walked away going, I'm not buying them. They all bought it and just complained. And I fear that's who we are as Americans. We're going to complain an awful lot. So the question that I have for you is, how do we take those complaints, that anger, that outrage, and move it to actual action instead of just outrage?
Yeah. I think that what we need right now are policies and leaders who are really innovative, really creative, solving these problems of affordability and energy supply. You know, that is, you know, policies like community energy. You subscribe to a portion of energy on a solar system that's often a field somewhere, and you get a credit on your monthly bill. That lowers your bills automatically. I think other things that folks can be doing is just, you know, stripping the red tape around large utility scale solar systems. We got to get more renewable energy, more solar on the grid. That is the solution. And I think if we have leaders who are, you know, making the case that this is the path forward to helping folks save money, then you get to participate in this economy where you're saving money as opposed to where you're conserving. And who doesn't want to be able to just save money and not have to like lose something in exchange for that?
Yeah. No, look, yeah, it may, on a logical, rational, sane kind of level, what you say makes perfect sense, which is why we're probably not going to do it. Because, you know, I think it was Churchill who said it. Americans always do the right thing after doing everything else first. So this is, to me, kind of one of those moments of, you know, because I look at you, and again, I'm a huge fan of solar. So walk me through some of how do you think we're going to be able to get policymakers? Because I'm with you. I think we need a presidential candidate to run on, you know, electrifying the nation. The last time I remember someone having that as the central tenet of their campaign was Jerry Brown back in 91, 92. Long time ago, his thing was to rewire the country because he said we lost like 70% of all of our electricity through transmission, which is insane if that's completely accurate. But I think the person who says, look, we need a you know, kind of a Manhattan Project, if you will, of energy to rewire homes, to get better technology, to get better, you know, renewables, all of the above. Maybe do you think that works, or maybe do we still have to touch the stove?
Okay, I'm going to be optimistic here.
All right. One of us.
I'm going to say what we actually need is policy and leadership on the local, state, and federal level. And I know that that is really hard, but that means that you have a better chance of somebody on one of those levels being a leader as opposed to needing some kind of presidential Zion of solar and renewables. But what we need are, you know, these local leaders, state leaders, and federal leaders who understand that energy costs are hurting their constituents. I think that these upcoming elections may really show that. And I think we as consumers are going to have to put our money where our mouth is. You know, the folks who can go solar, go solar. There are programs for community solar in other states, actually 22 or 23 other states. Of course, Pennsylvania is behind. And I think that they're becoming more and more popular. And we're seeing a big demand for solar energy just being part of the grid and part of utilities' default service plans. So the more people put their money where their mouth is, I think we drive elected officials to pay attention.
Yeah, outside of conserve, the other word conservatives hate is community. So the I think you lost some folks there with the idea of because community. I don't know if you know. I don't know if you're up on the buzzword dog whistle politic lingo. That's code for socialist. We clearly don't want community. That would be bad. I know we've joked about this. When do you think the breaking point is, though? I mean, honestly, for all truth in this, the prices are going to skyrocket. There's going to be real pain across the board. We're going to see stories of Granny, you know, freezing to death in her home because she didn't turn on the heat. There's going to be these horrible stories. When do you see a breaking point? And are you optimistic that maybe we could avoid that? I don't even know why I'm asking that. But are you optimistic?
Yes, I am. So I think that within the next year or so, we are going to start seeing real, like, even, you know, escalating impacts of these prices. You know, we're going to start seeing another rise next year. I think that it is also the data centers are going to be starting to come online. You know, it's just naturally, things are going to be inside a pressure cooker. And I think that the legislators are really going to be responding to that. But I am really optimistic because There are a number of really great proposals at the state level here in Pennsylvania for solar. So there's something called balcony solar, which is just small solar panels that you can kind of put out on, you know, your balcony or your porch. And it just powers a couple of outlets in your home. And, you know, that is really exciting for some people to be able to participate in solar without putting down the $20,000+ to go solar. But that's just one instance of this like need and demand for solar energy that we're seeing across Pennsylvania.
There it is. At least something that someone can walk away with. And, you know, maybe tomorrow, you know, I'm sure somewhere online we can find balcony solar panels. I may actually start looking for it myself. Monica.
They're going to be at Home Depot, so.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Monica, I appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Keep up the great work, and I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you so much, Rick. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Monica Carey. She's the Pennsylvania State Director of Solar United Neighbors. You can take a look at their work at solarunitedneighbors.org. Want to hear your thoughts? Excited about the idea of putting a solar panel out on the porch there and maybe heating a little something, maybe charge your cell phone. I don't know. Something. Want to hear it? Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Know what's happening in your community across Wisconsin and around the nation, all right here on WCFW.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Thickening clouds for tonight, a low in the low 30s. A mostly cloudy day ahead for tomorrow, a high right around 50. Maybe a sprinkle or shower Friday, more clouds, highs upper 40s. Cooler temps again on Saturday, warming up for Sunday. Currently 35 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Brady Ewing, two-time Big Ten champion with Wisconsin football.
To hear that the coaches aren't fostering those relationships at the high schools, that has been the heartbeat of the team before Fickell's time. I got recruited other places, but I chose to be a Wisconsin Badger because of what that meant to me. If it means something to you, not just the name on the back, but the name you have on the front of your jersey, that's going to have staying power in today's college athletic landscape.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
After yesterday, I got a couple of emails from folks going, well, who's paying for the North Mag-a-Lago, the gold-plated Ego Palace? Who's paying for the bigly tremendous ballroom of self-love and ego? Well, ultimately, you and me, us. Only they're saying it's with private money so they don't have to pay prevailing wage like we talked about yesterday. But you know, and this is where I, again, love Bernie Sanders, who pointed out that, it's going to be Google $18 billion, Amazon $16 billion, Microsoft $12 billion, Facebook $11 billion that we've given them through the one big nightmare bill that Trump just got through. And for that, a little kickback's going to happen. You know, they'll give you a couple hundred million dollars here or there to build the monument to Trump and all of this, because they understand return on investment, and their return on investment massive. And I love when Bernie Sanders puts stuff out for me so I don't have to go looking it up. But here to share some thoughts on the North Mag-a-Lago and, well, what we're going to sacrifice at the altar of Trump's ego, I've asked my good friend Alex Lawson to come share some thoughts. Alex is the executive director of Social Security Works, socialsecurityworks.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, always my pleasure to be here.
So you're in D.C. What are your thoughts of the North Mag-a-Lago? What are your thoughts of the big, beautiful, tremendously wonderful, gaudy gold-plated ballroom that we're supposed to be getting?
You know, it it is a really easy to see kickback. I mean, this is just corruption, right? So this is what the Republicans and Trump did. They stole healthcare from 15 million people, doubled, tripled healthcare costs for 24 million more. Rural hospitals closing across this country, nursing homes, everybody's costs are going up. All of that was so they could give trillions of dollars in tax handouts to billionaires and their corporations. Then those billionaires and corporations, they just have to kick back a tiny little piece into the Epstein ballroom, and on the corruption goes. And, you know, the Trump organization went from like 50 million to over 850 million this year. So, you know, they're not trying to hide what's going on. They're stealing from us to give to the richest people in the history of the world. And those rich people are paying for that theft of our money by, you know, buying just really ugly Gilded Age, the Trumpist Gilded Age Epstein ballroom. And, you know, I'm not one for pomp and ceremony, Rick. So I'm not going to like spend too much time on this. But I did have the chance. I've lived here for 20 years, and I've had the chance to visit the East Wing. There's history there, yeah. You know, and they just tore it down there's not even permits filed for it. There's probably asbestos spewing all over the entire place, right? Like none of this is done in a way other than to flex exactly what it is, right? Yeah. Which is I can do whatever I want, yeah, whenever I want, to whomever I want.
Whenever, however, all of that. And this is why I think this is a big deal. And I think it is worth spending time on because, as you pointed out, there is history there. That is our house. It's not his, it's ours. And went to nobody. There's no process in this. Using quote-unquote private money that is just kickback money from money that we've given so that they don't have to pay prevailing wage. They don't have to go by any regulations. This is, to me, what the world that they want to look like. So they want to have a king to be able to do whatever they want, however they want, whenever they want, without, you know, you or me or anyone else having any input whatsoever. So I do think this is a big deal.
It absolutely is, Rick. It's a huge deal. And I do think it's breaking through to people. I sort of wish they'd paid attention earlier, but, you know, welcome when your eyes are opened that this is what's going on. Like they wrote it down in Project 2025. So people who were paying attention, you know, they knew it's in Project 2025. We're going to do it because we think that by the time the courts catch up, yeah, it'll already be done, fait accompli, or the Supreme Court is going to get our back. And they're doing it on all fronts, right? They just killed a bunch more people in boats that they claim are smuggling drugs, presenting no evidence, breaking all sorts of laws, international laws, military norms, just on and on. And so this is their game. They want to show the American people that Donald Trump does not have to follow any rules. There are no checks and balances on him. And, you know, it's theater and they're doing a good job of it. The destruction of the East Wing is like really visible. But the truth is there are checks and balances on him. And we can't let the theater of what he's doing actually become the reality.
Yeah. Are there really though? I mean, honestly.
Is not checking his behavior. It's not because...
No, this is where I was going to go. Are there really checks and balances when you've got the Speaker of the House who, you know, he kind of, you know, humiliated by saying that, you know, Mike Johnson's going to do whatever he wants him to do.
Yeah. And so there are checks and balances in the system, meaning the authority exists. The Supreme Court could be a check on an out of control presidency. unless they're part of it, right? Unless they're complicit in it. Congress could be a check on an out of control presidency unless they're in on it, right? And that's what we're seeing here is that the billionaire class have really locked things up. They've been playing a long game and it is accelerating, right? And so this is what we're seeing right now, I think, is sort of the end game of the billionaires. It was 40 years, you know, this is since Reagan, but this is what they want. It's rule by the billionaires with no, you know, they don't have to think about the people, any rules. Who cares about rules? They can do whatever they want to whoever they want. That's their vision. This is the Trumpist Gilded Age.
But Alex, he's the getter done president. He's just getting stuff done. That's all. All that stuff that you're talking about just gets in the way of getting stuff done. Didn't you know?
I mean, he's definitely getting stuff done, like jacking up everyone's healthcare premiums. And that happens November 1. I mean, it's Rick, I'm a nerd. I'm a policy wonk. So as I know the magnitude of what's coming, and just people just don't get it. And this is just the start of this cataclysmic cascade of, right? Like, people's healthcare, their insurance is going to go up, you know, two, three. That's sort of if you're lucky, 2 to 3 times, right? And if you're unlucky, goes up, I think there is a story of Oregon, eightfold, right? Like that's unaffordable. So obviously what people are going to do is they'll go without healthcare and they're going to die. They're going to get sick and die. That's what the plan of the Gilded Age is, right? They want to create they don't want prosperous working class, middle class society that has power. They want scrambling, destitute and desperate people who will, you know, do whatever the billionaires tell them to do. Wow. And that's what we're seeing the but that is the vision that they have. I will also say the people still have a tremendous amount of power. We have to exercise it and we have to, in every avenue, push against this idea that he's a dictator. He can do whatever he wants, or ICE can do whatever they want. They can't. They can't do whatever they want. They are still governed by laws. That they can get away with something for a while is very different than that they're allowed to do it, no, right? There will be a day after Trump when people are held to account.
Will there be? I mean, you know, I keep seeing the trial balloon being floated that 2028, he's going to run for re-election. And I know my MAGA friends are going, he's just joking. No, that's what we used to call a trial balloon, to see how if it will float. And the weird thing is I haven't heard people coming out and resoundingly saying, under no circumstances is it possible that he runs in 28, which is the weird thing to me, because that's the reality. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's this sort of lulls Nazism thing that they do, right? Where they're like, oh, no, it's just a joke. But the truth is he can't run again. That's just, it's not possible. So what he could do is subvert our democracy and go against the Constitution. And then we're in a different country, right? Like then the United States of America ceases to exist. That's always possible. We are not, you know, some magical country that can't have happen to us what happens around the world and throughout history, where governments are toppled by very rich, very powerful, and oftentimes very dumb people who run it into the ground. And that can happen here unless the people fight back. But it's not going to be, you know, a piece of paper that actually saves us. It's not going to be rules and norms. It's going to be the people enforcing those rules. It's going to be the people standing up and saying, you know what? No, I'm not going to allow this to happen. And I do think that we are getting more and more signals that, you know, especially because the healthcare cost increases I mean, that's deep in MAGA land are getting hurt the worst, right? Like the Arkansas is getting just savaged by the healthcare cost increases. And so the propaganda cannon is starting to, I think, break down some, because you can lie to people and they can believe it if it's happening over there. Right. But when it's happening to them right now and they can see it, they can't deny it. And I do think that's where, you know, after these months of the presidency, I think that's where we are now, and at least November 1.
Because all of the things that I'm seeing, healthcare costs, you know, New Jersey said 175% increase in their costs. I saw that yesterday. Electricity prices are going through the roof. Gas prices are still going up. They haven't gone down to a buck a gallon. Eggs, they haven't gone down to 99 cents a dozen either. Everything that we were told about the utopia of a Trump dictatorship hasn't come to fruition. And it doesn't appear to me that he's at all interested, considering the fact that his spokesperson said that the one thing he's most focused on is that North Mag-a-Lago.
Yeah, the Epstein ballroom. And you know what? I think that is probably true, because if you like really get the symbolism there, the overt corruption and demonstration of the imperial presidency, that's what he's saying. I just tore down the people's house that I am do not own, right? Like, I just destroyed it because I can. So I do think he probably is focused on that. Now, what the people are focused on, they see that as a symbol, but they're going to be focused on the fact that they can't afford to live in this country. And it's worse. And it's his fault. And I think that's what's becoming more and more clear to people. Republicans are on vacation while the Democrats are saying, we want to work with you, Republicans, to help you, Republicans, help your constituents who are getting hurt the hardest. And the Republicans are like, nope, we're going to shut down the government rather than help our constituents afford to live in this country.
No, it's amazing. And look, you know, I've had people say, well, it hasn't gotten so bad yet. And I'm going, it is. Everywhere you look, things are starting to break down. And in your world of Social Security, I get calls from people who are going, hey, I've tried to get through. I've got friends who've got family members trying to get through. All they get are automation and hold. There aren't people to talk to, and the AI stuff isn't working. Unless you know how to navigate these systems, you're kind of screwed. And I understand the Washington Post just did a big story on this topic.
Yeah, what we've talked about, Rick, right? Like I know what's happening in Social Security, and the experts who we talk to, and they're just telling us over and again, just getting worse, right? Like the situation is just getting worse. And you have one person in an office where there used to be 10. Nobody can get through on the phones. That's what the Washington Post piece was about. And, you know, I've even had some people like sort of maybe a cynicism, you know, like, oh, well, you're saying that, you're overhyping it. And I'm like, I'm underhyping it, if anything. The Washington Post, you know, really detailed. And it's not accidental. They didn't accidentally destroy our ability to get in touch with the Social Security Administration about our money. It's part of their plan to wreck it, to privatize it, to make things worse so that they can profit, right? And the guy on top of it, Frank Bisignano, hits the company. They run privatized Social Security. So they're not hiding it. It's flexing. So it was a really great piece. I actually invite everyone I urge everyone to read it and to send it to their members of Congress, Republicans, Democrats, everybody, and point out, like, this is unacceptable. We pay for the phone system. It's not the government. It's not general fund. It's from premiums that we pay into Social Security. That also pays for the administration of it. But what Trump's doing to Social Security is exactly what he's done to the East Wing of the White House, and they're just destroying things for profit. That's their only game plan, right?
And it's been their goal for a very long time. So again, not surprised. It's been written in the Bible. It is right there in Project 2025. And maybe they'll put the Bible and the Constitution in Project 2025 together in the next fleecing of Trump's flock when they try and hawk that merch off. Last bit I've got for you. Obviously, the shutdown's continuing on. Do you see an end coming? Do you see fixes to this stuff? Or, as you said a moment ago, all this breaking is on purpose for the goal of, I think, privatizing. Anything?
Yeah, I think there is, once it's right in front of people's faces, they're going to just hammer their politicians, their members of Congress, their senators. And then those Republicans are going to, and you're starting to see it break already, right? You're seeing some pretty prominent defections, because at the end of the day, a very wise person told me this, politicians only care about one election, their own. So they're like, okay, well, Donald Trump can destroy me with his billionaire friends if I stand against him. But so they're more scared of him than their constituents. But once people are literally, their families are being ripped apart by not being able to afford the healthcare that they need all across this, especially red MAGA territory, I think that there will be a deal that is reached, because it's literally, again, it's the Democrats saying to the Republicans, just work with us. We're trying to help you help your constituents, right? Like the Democrats are saying, we don't care that this is, you know, bad for us politically, because what's good would be to just let it all be terrible, right? And let the consequences. But the Democrats are saying, work with us. We will help people in your states, in your districts. And the Republicans are saying, no, we're not we're going to shut down the government rather than help our constituents, our bosses. And so I do think the scale will change when their offices are just being flooded, when those rate notices go out to everybody on November 1st. And Rick, the last part on that is, that's why they're spending, they're putting an enormous amount of effort into hiding that to the last moment. Any other year, all of this stuff would have already been out by mid-October, but the insurance companies are working. They don't want Trump to turn on them. So they're delaying getting those notices out to the last minute. Senators Wyden and Schumer just had a big push on this, that Health and Human Services, HHS, needs to stop hiding what is about to happen, right? Like, give people warning. It's called window shopping. And it's saying your rates are about to go way up, so you might want to start looking around now. But November 1, it happens. It's everybody's going to get it. So that's when I think those phone lines on the Hill are going off the hook.
Yep. Well, we'll see what happens. Alex, as always, I appreciate the time. I like to say good stuff, but not really. Not good for us. Alex Lawson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts. You ready for it? You ready for, as he's pointing out, come November 1st, the big increases? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1975. That was the day that the National Organization for Women, or NOW, called for a strike by women across the nation. They called the day Alice Doesn't Day. This referred to a critically acclaimed movie by the director Martin Scorsese that came out the year before, entitled Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. The main character in the film is Alice Height, who pursues her dream of being a singer after she is widowed. The film was lauded by feminists as a story of women's empowerment. NOW used the film title and asked women to participate with the slogan, Alice Doesn't, You Fill in the Blank. Women were encouraged to participate in the day however they could, including refraining from volunteering, shopping, and if possible, working for one day to demonstrate their importance to the economy. Women who could not skip work were asked to wear armbands to show their solidarity with the cause. In an interview published in the Chicago Tribune, NOW President Karen DeCroo explained, quote, "There is a myth that women in the workforce could go home, but if they did, our economy would stop. If all the secretaries did not come to work, all things would stop." But not all women were excited about the day. Some anti-feminist women decided to protest the day by wearing pink, baking cookies, and performing other stereotypical female tasks. While now called the event a success, Time magazine deemed it a spectacular failure. One critique was that the event reflected the white middle-class dominance of the women's movement. Working-class women, and especially women of color, had a much more difficult time withholding their labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, it's interesting listening to Alex that it's going to hurt in MAGA land a lot more. And the weird thing is as he was talking, I was thinking about something I had seen on a Facebook post that maybe got, there's no way that there are people walking around New York City with MAGA for Mamdani t-shirts and merch on. And the reality is, as I dug into it, there are actual MAGA people who, what they bought was we're going to make you dictator, but I want cheap eggs. I want cheap stuff. I want my MTV. I want cheap stuff. I want life to be easy, and it's not. And that's the reason that they're listening to Mamdani, who's going, look, we're going to do some stuff on public transit. We're going to do stuff on housing, on affordability. Taking care of people who are struggling, helping people, you know? Sad reality is, though, the Republicans are using Mamdani to weaponize his candidacy. I've heard a lot of, he's a socialist, he's a communist, because he is talking about, and it's weird to me, that the Muslim guy is talking about Christian values, and the Christians are like, no, we can't have that. It's a weird world we're in right now. It really is. Because remember when Republicans were for corporate America? Now they're for oligarchs. Remember when, corporations were somewhat, pretending to care about the country, and Republicans were all on board, and Democrats were there too? But they at least believe that workers should have some rights to balance the power of corporate America. It's now, we don't even care about, it's almost like we don't care about corporations. We're bringing back kings and lords and that on the Republican side. And it got me thinking about something. My grandfather told me a story, long time ago, about, back in the 70s. It was their wedding anniversary, and he thought it'd be nice to take my grandmother to a nice dinner and to a play that she had wanted to go to downtown. At least this was the story. And, he saved up and, made reservations and did all of this stuff as a working person would. You follow the rules. So he bought the tickets, he made reservations, showed up on time, all of that stuff. And he said he remembered, walking into the restaurant and, with their nice clothes on. And the boss was there trying to get a table. And they came and took my grandfather and my grandmother and sat them down. And they had dinner, and the boss, got seated a little bit later. And he said they went to the play, and they got there in plenty of time. And they were sitting there, and there were two seats open next to them. And a little bit as the play was about to start, in come the boss because, dinner ran late. And he said, I knew then that workers had gotten some power and that the bosses were going to really push back. And here we are all these years later, his prediction of them crushing the working class and then putting us back in our place. We're living it. We're living what he knew, which is they don't want working people around. They want us to clean up, to do their work, to make them their profits, to do all that stuff, but not have the security, not have the benefits, not have a bit of life, of prosperity. Mission accomplished, wealth class.
This is where we are. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a story like that? Grandpa share something with you? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Download the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. As Hurricane Melissa gets closer to the central Bahamas in hard-hit Jamaica, the cleanup and repairs have begun. This resident rode out the 185-mile-per-hour winds.
It was terrible. The wind, it was violent. It was terrible.
Dozens of people have died across Jamaica, Haiti, and Cuba. CBS's Jason Allen is in Santa Cruz, Jamaica.
Video from above the fishing village of Alligator Pond shows massive destruction. And on the ground,
roof has gone, clothes has wet up. I need some help. Please, I need some help.
Power lines are down across Jamaica, roads covered in mud and water, and homes damaged or destroyed.
Former Central Illinois Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson is convicted of second-degree murder in the shooting death of Sonia Massey, a black woman who called 911 about a possible problem.